Yay, hello. Welcome back to another episode of the Mindful Drinking Movement podcast. I'm your host, Jess Betancourt, and I have a very special, attractive guest today. My very own flesh and blood, my sister, Kristen Schroeder.
Hello, mindful drinking movement people.
Yeah. She is up in my mix visiting me here in Spain from Nevada. And I just am so blessed and honored to have my wonderful, delicious sister close to me. And it's like, what a great opportunity to like sit down and talk to her without all six of our kids around
Yeah.
and glean some wisdom from her journey that she's been on, in particular with alcohol. I mean, we could talk about other things.
Oh,
She has
yeah.
a rich life. But we have an alcohol relationship related podcast here, so we'll try to stick to the thematics instead of meandering around the periphery a lot like we tend to do.
Yes,
Yeah, we're cool. We're fun.
we are.
Yeah. We're super glad you're here. So curious. My
Yes.
sister has 11 years sober from alcohol and drugs.
And drugs
Let's throw
and
that in there.
any mind-altering substance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She barely takes an aspirin.
That's exactly right.
Totally.
Sometimes melatonin is my like woohoo on the weekends.
Fun time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only if I've had too much coffee, which is my other woohoo.
Up and down.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's okay.
See?
That's the extreme that I go.
Well, I think it's pretty normal,
Yeah.
right? Like we all want to change and modulate
Sure.
our moods and our behaviors. And many of us find alcohol is a really easy way to do that, an accessible way to do that, until the solution becomes really problematic. It's
Yeah.
not a long-term solution.
No, not at all.
So, which leads me to my first question.
Yes.
Okay. What was the pivotal point in your life when you were like, no more? I gotta change this. I can't do this anymore. And you can give as much backstory as you want or as not as much as you want. It's
Yeah.
totally up to
Thank you.
you.
Well, I feel like I have in my mind's eye this very specific moment because it was kind of that like aha moment of clarity. However, and that's kind of what I use when people talk to me about my drinking and subsequent recovery of like that being the very clear shift, though there were probably moments before that alluded that I might have a problem, but I was consciously not ready to stop. Like, even though I became aware of it being a problem, I still consciously decided that the problem would be better than life, you know. Like I so wanted to get. Can we swear on here?
Of course.
I so wanted to get fucked up, right?
Yeah.
That like that was what I mean. I wanted that. I didn't even want drinking became arbitrary. It was like I wanted to black out and I wanted to get fucked up, you know. And but anyhow, the story, right? The very clear moment that I had was laying on this couch and you know. If I were to tell you my whole life of drinking, it was like the same thing in different places. Like the first time I got drunk, I blacked out. I wanted to be that every time. So I spent 17 years trying to more or less scientifically create that same intoxication and always missing the mark and then needing more alcohol, more drugs, and more men and what have you. But when I was 31, it's when I got sober. So I'm 42 for those of you who wanted, didn't do the quick math.
If you want a picture, I'll post one.
Yeah. I was living with my mother. I, you know, had gone through a series of jobs and each one with less job.
Time at the
So like it
job.
went from 6 months to 3 months to 3 weeks to 3 days to like get the fuck out of here. We know who you are and you can't get a job here. And I was like, whoa, like did I really burn that many bridges in the biggest little city? But I had. And so I was unemployable, and my life became this cyclical thing of drinking vodka, smoking cigarettes, crying, trying to sleep, being sweaty, just like lather, rinse, repeat. And I was living with my mom and sleeping on the floor. At this time, I have twins that are two, going to be three. And like my world was just very, very small, and I felt it, right? Like I was aware of it. How limited I was in doing anything because I couldn't even leave the house. I had no means to do anything. Nobody wanted to help me. I mean, nobody wanted to
hang out with
you.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest.
Not help. They wanted to help. They didn't want to pay for my demise.
Right.
So I was shacking up with the neighbor of my mom, and he had gone off wherever because he was just like me and an addict and drinking somewhere. And I was in his place for like 3 days when it felt like forever. And my, as I said, I would like throw up. I had nothing to throw up, and I was like puking bile, and I would try to drink vodka and my body would reject it. And so I would take a spoon and like pour vodka down my throat little by little to like allow myself to build up to drink a little more. And then I'd smoke a cigarette and I'd pass out, and then 1, 2, 3 and 1, 2, 3. Mm. And I was laying on this couch, right? And it's like, your body's you're fucked up to a degree, but you're also so aware. You cannot turn off that part of your brain that is just like so hyper aware of the fact that like this is not living. Mm-hmm. And so I'm laying there and I hear my kids come home with my mom, and like, you know, they're, it was through the breezeway, so they're on the other side of the door going into the apartment across the way. And it was like listening into this conch shell, and it's like this ocean sound of like being so far away, and they're laughing and they're little and they're full of life and they're just like, you know, promise of everything and have no clue what's happening on the other side of the door.
Oh my God.
And I'm laying on the couch and like in that moment, right? And I don't know what you speak of, but I believe in a God, right? And in that moment, like I was able to be super aware that that life did not exist with the life of me on the couch. And so I, like I say I, but I have come to believe also that it wasn't that I made like a willful choice in that moment. More so, I was just like absolutely defeated. I had no other option. I did not know what to do. All I could do was drink, puke, fall asleep, and hearing those kids and like being the moment of clarity, like I can't be that and this. And so that is the moment, I think, mm-hmm. that you asked. But yeah, I just got up off the couch and like went across that breezeway and went to my mom, our mom, and was like,
mom.
Yeah, and just was like, I can't do it anymore, right? And I had forever had all these like, I need help. I will get help this time. Please help me. And it was usually because, you know, they say the foxhole prayer of like, get me out of this situation and I won't do it again. But you just want to get out of the hole so you can't do it again. Mm-hmm. But I think in that moment, she really knew that I meant it, because I wasn't, it wasn't elaborate. It wasn't like, hey, I really want help and I'm really going to do, it was just like, I need help, mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, mm-hmm. she shipped me off to Santa Cruz.
In that moment?
The next day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you have to act fast. Had I had any time?
When the sincerity is there.
Totally.
Yeah.
Had I had any time, like the beauty of it all, and when I look back on a timeline, had I had any time to really think anything through, I wouldn't have done it. I attribute my sobriety. Yeah, but I attribute being sober today because in my first year of actively being sober, no one gave me time to stop and think and be like, well, why don't you think about it before you do it? It was like, you're doing this, go, go. And I just took suggestions and I just did the next thing in front of me. And like, you know, because had I reasoned why I should wait, mm-hmm. because that's what I did for a long time. I mean, when I first had my kids, it was like, well, I can't get sober right now because
it's stressful.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah,
I need this, that, and I work at a restaurant.
Totally. Yeah. And there's, and I can't not work at the restaurant because then I don't have income. So that the gift was not knowing what I was getting into and not knowing what I wanted to, what I was going to do, mm-hmm. other than I can't drink. And
was that the last time you drank?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I got in the car, if you want me to finish it. And then I got
I saw it
with a...
We will stop at 45 to go get our kids.
Yes.
Yeah, keep going.
Okay. And then I got in my little Nissan Versa that had a...
flat tire.
No, spare tire on it.
Okay.
That Lord knows how long it'd been on there because I couldn't take care of simple things like that. And those things didn't take precedent. If I had a flat tire, it was like, do I get the flat tire or an 8-ball? I mean, obviously I'll walk. I don't need a car.
I'll leave it here.
Yeah.
7-Eleven.
Totally.
Yeah.
So I drove from Reno, Nevada to Santa Cruz, California, which is, I don't know, 5.5 hours,
seven.
Seemed like a year. Mm-hmm. And just had all that time with myself, just like chain smoking cigarettes on this little tire and like crying and talking out loud, and got to Santa Cruz where your then boyfriend, now husband, was. who welcomed me with open arms, because you weren't there. You were in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow. And then thus began the journey. And then I'm still on, because it is like a proactive, continual process of, like, much like you do, right? Being mindfully aware of how you're drinking. I don't think that you tell somebody how to do it and then you know it and you go. It's like an active, ever evolving and ever working program, right? And so that is.
And it's so unique to the individual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they're like, why I do what I do is because I think there's many ways to the top of the mountain.
Yes.
And like what works for some people will work for some people, but it won't work for everybody.
I agree.
And I really, my philosophy is to like be true to your own path and find the community that supports you and your beliefs and your values.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So on that note, how did you, okay, so that was the decision, but then how did you stay on that path in the beginning?
Well, like I said, it wasn't anything that I thought about. And it was just, I was so desperate and destitute and low that anything was better. And the gift is, and I said this before, is that I didn't know, it's not like I got sober because I needed to. I mean, I didn't even think about my kids in that moment, really. It's not like I got sober. I did, hearing them and knowing those lives didn't exist, but it wasn't a constant thing in my mind of, I'm staying sober for my kids and I'm getting sober to get a job to, I just didn't want to die. And like, I was dying. And that's the bottom line. And so I like decided that living seemed better, right? Or even though it didn't feel like that, because I was miserable and depressed and filled with shame and guilt, there was hope in me from a divine providence, and is my belief.
You can use God words and
spiritual
words. Yeah,
and I only, you know, and I should say that because I'm, it's so sacred and special to me, but I also don't, like you were saying, because I say God, don't let that deflect or deter anybody, because it doesn't have to be God. It can be anything.
But yeah.
For me, this is my own personal experience, but I also believe atheists can get sober too. Like, I don't think that anybody is immune to having a spiritual experience.
Exactly.
But that's what kept me going, was just not being right and not knowing what to do or what to expect. And being a, our friend Charlie likes to say that every time I tell stories and I don't hear myself, he's like, well, that's your, you know, German analytical mind. I'm like, I'm not analytical, but I guess that I am, right? And I can overanalyze so many things. And the reason why it took me so long to get sober is because I spent so much time trying to go back and figure out, at what point did I become an alcoholic?
Oh.
And until I let that go and like didn't need to know.
May I pause you?
Sure.
So that you felt like you needed to identify that before you could move on?
Kind of like because I couldn't, and maybe that was an excuse. Maybe that was my way of subconsciously
procrastinating.
Yeah,
prolonging.
And the drinking and drugging. But
like, I don't have a concrete answer for this.
Right.
So I can't continue to figure it out.
Exactly.
While intoxicating myself.
Yes. But then in retrospect, like being sober and looking back, it was like the moment, in that moment on that couch, when I became an alcoholic, if my dad treated me, if I was, you know, sexually assaulted, all of those things didn't hold any weight in that moment. I didn't need to know why.
Right.
And so like staying sober, I don't need to know why I'm an alcoholic, and I don't need to uncover if it's like because I was whatever kind of kid or something happened to me in high school. It's like, I consider myself an alcoholic, and I know you don't use that word, but I am addiction prone, or whatever you want to say, for whoever.
If the word helps you, you use the word.
Well, I can't drink safely. And like,
right.
So, and time and time again, I have proved that to myself.
For sure.
If I put alcohol in my body, all bets are off, and I'm going to drink everything that I can see, and that's it. And you can attest to that.
For sure.
Yeah. So that's it. Like, I didn't need to analyze that, and I didn't need to understand anything other than, was I willing to accept that I couldn't drink safely? Yes. Okay. So then from there, it's like whatever was suggested to me by people who were in my community of sobriety
mm-hmm.
who shared their stories with me that sounded similar, and now they were living sober lives. I was like, okay, I'll be willing to do what you said you did.
I'll try that on and see if that works.
Just to be open-minded. Sure. Like, what kept me going was being open-minded and
amazing.
not having an end goal. You know what I mean? Not like, okay, here's my like a 5-year plan. I want to be sober for 5 years because I want to get this job and make this money and have this house. It was like literally just like, what do I do next to not drink today and like feel better about myself? And then that, after so many days of not having alcohol or drugs in my body, became, wow, I feel really good. And how do I now not drink to feel even better and maybe help other people feel better, right? Like lights are turned on and you experience joy and love and forgiveness and all these beautiful things that you thought you understood before, but you didn't, right? It's like you think you knew what love is and you think you knew what joy and all these other things were, but the reality is because you're intoxicated, it's not necessarily as authentic or the realest expression of those things.
Everything is filtered through the like fuzziness or the blackoutness or the brownoutness of having alcohol in your system, and alcohol becomes a filter in and of itself. So, but I think that's what like a lot of people and probably a lot of our listeners struggle with is like, how do you separate that, take that filter off? Because if you're so accustomed to having that filter, that seems normal. Right? Like the normalcy of being drunk feels much more comfortable than the mystery or the unknown of not, of going through a day without drinking.
Yeah.
That's very uncomfortable for people who are accustomed to drinking every day. And like, there's a spectrum of intoxication, right? There's people who drink 4 beers a day that are like, this is my filter.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's people like you who have been spooning vodka down your throat because you couldn't drink a drink.
Right.
There's a spectrum, but is one better than the other? No, like it's just, there's still an alcohol filter over one's life and removing that feels scary, right? Like the taking away of that is the most fearful part, I think, that why people don't venture into it sooner, even though they talk to themselves about it often.
Absolutely. And if I'm allowed to like jump this far ahead,
of course,
one of my favorite quotes, and I think that you know it, is Marianne Williamson, right? Who says, we are more of, and this is a paraphrase, but more afraid of our darkness than we are of our light. And like with that, right, it's for 17 years.
No, I think it's the opposite.
We're more afraid of our light
than our darkness.
I'm sorry. We're more afraid of our light. And so it's like being fully alive is more scary than playing small and like not taking responsibility and being accountable and all these different things, right? Because when you are this big, bright, beautiful individual in life and fully in yourself and sober and aware, you can do anything. And that takes on its own kind of fear, you know,
there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that kind of self-awareness.
Well, and then living
responsibility for yourself and of your life.
Yes.
Whereas when you're drunk, it's like, oh, well, they drink too much, they pass out on the couch, and things go by the wayside just because a person is in that state.
Absolutely.
It becomes a scapegoat.
Yeah.
And even like my bottle of wine habit a day for years, I was like secretly delighted in not having to be the responsible one because this was my habit.
Yeah.
And my habit took priority over these other things that I was supposed to be doing, like paying taxes,
right,
or filling out these forms,
right,
taking the car to the mechanic.
Nobody wants to do it.
No. It's so nice to check out with alcohol.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. The more, and I think you are more and more studying this too, or learning about it, or maybe you've already learned about it, but dopamine was like a whole new concept to me. You know, I didn't understand that is what it is. It's this like, and then because you are anesthetizer, you drink or do drugs for so long, you are pretty desensitized. And so it takes a lot for you to feel anything. So taking away your filter and just being in life can feel really mundane or boring or so stupid because you're just easy, right?
Yeah.
And so we're apt to confuse like this peace and serenity with complacency and like I don't know. Just, and so it's,
that something's wrong,
totally,
or that life is boring,
yeah, or that you're not inspired,
right?
Or and that's not the truth, right? But I mean,
I think that those characteristics are really specific of a withdrawal phase,
yeah.
And then when you can move through that window, or I work with people who move through that window a lot,
yeah,
right? But that window becomes shorter and shorter because your brain can heal itself, like mm-hmm. your neurons heal. You grow new neurons when you remove the daily or hourly practice yeah. of cutting all that off and desensitizing yourself, as you say. Like, yeah, you do. Like, if you think about it, when you take a drink, you lose your vision.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't hear.
Right.
You can't smell. Therefore, right. you can't taste food very well. And you lose your locomotive skills.
Delayed.
You can't drive yeah. to the point where you can't even walk.
Yeah.
So when you look at it like that, like when you take that away, your body almost is like relearning how to use its own sensibilities, mm-hmm. sense, using the most literal way of the word,
yeah.
right? Like your senses are regaining sensibility, and that takes a little bit of time until you feel like you're more present in the world. And like being bored is just kind of like a state of normalcy as well. Like,
yeah.
I think we should totally normalize being bored and having these lull phases, like you were telling me earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I tell my kids, it's like my kids are always, I'm so bored, Mom. And someone told me to, you know, to tell them, only boring people get bored.
Oh my God, Dave Boyd said that.
Yeah, well, they yeah. don't like that.
No.
But it's true, right? You're not bored. You, and you know, much to their own, like, it's partly me that I've allowed them to have so much time on their phones and these things that take them away just from their life. And so if you do take that dopamine hit of having your phone or something that's, you know, immediate gratitude and sensationalized or whatever,
mm-hmm.
it feels boring mm-hmm. because it's not immediate. And so, right, it's like, how do you, it's not being bored, it's just being still. And like,
yeah,
but we do live in a very fast world. Mm-hmm. And so it feels, and that it took me a while in my sobriety to be at a place where it was okay for me to sit still, because mm-hmm. I felt, because I spent so much time not doing anything, that I had all this stuff to make up for,
mm-hmm.
and being still, I felt guilty. I was like, shouldn't mm-hmm. I, you know? And so I'd wake up at, and I wanted to do it all. I wanted to be on the PTA and like make all the cupcakes and be the school classroom mom and go, you know, work two jobs and do all these things and work out and all this stuff and just fill every moment. And that is not good.
No, that's either. Like trauma response.
Yeah. Right.
Well, let me
yes.
insert this next question into what you were just saying. How would you say that stillness and spiritual practices mm-hmm. have become like woven into the fabric of your dailiness, and how has that supported you and helped you in maintaining a path of sobriety, but also in a way feeling more fulfilled? Like you, we were saying off record
mm-hmm.
that the chase now for you is to, like, you're chasing miracles and you're chasing this spiritual aliveness
yeah.
just as hard as you were chasing cocaine and alcohol.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And for some reason you said, okay, I got a little excited for a second. See, it's like, okay, you know, and that's another, I will answer that question, but that is another thing that, like, there's no shame or guilt or wrongness of it. You know, it's like for a minute, when I first was sober, I felt bad if someone talked about pills, which I love pills too, but if somebody mm-hmm. talked about something like that and it delighted me, I was like, I shouldn't feel delighted. It's like, well, yeah, you should, because it's exciting and it was fun for a minute. And like, there's nothing wrong with accepting that you had a good time doing those things, mm-hmm. you know, but anyhow, that's another, but the spiritual part. Okay. So, I think what's exciting about it is, well, let's see, let me rephrase this. Cause it is woven into, and I would say that I am sober today because of my spiritual practices. I would say that the reason that I don't participate in other things is because this is my new drug, right? Mm-hmm. Is being really, or practicing being centered and practicing being aware and present.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fruits of that are just the same. I mean, if not, they're even cooler, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like you could take mushrooms or acid and have a pretty cool trip. That's cool. But that stuff was real or not real, and it doesn't really carry out of that. You might you might retain something in your mind that you were enlightened by, and you're like, oh, cool, I had this epiphany. But in my experience, I've had these really incredible moments where it's like I know that something outside of myself has worked for me because I have connected with it. And like with my children, so I have twins, as you know.
I do know.
Boy and girl twins are gonna be 14 tomorrow. Yeah. Unbelievable. But so my son, your nephew, had all these behavioral things, right? And it's like it's a not an oxymoron. It's a oh my gosh, I can't think of the word. But the fact that like you got to surrender to win, or you know, you've got to like
it's like a counterintuitive approach.
Yes, and so the more that you are powerless over something, and I say that in the sense that like the more that you loosen your grip on things and you say that you're powerless, it's not that you're not, but like you become empowered by being powerless. And that has been my experience. And so
I mean, for me, it's like when we are really ego powered.
Yeah.
I think you're talking about that kind of power, like surrendering that type of.
Surrendering power. What you think is best.
Right. Like being, your egocentric self. Like, yes. This is what I believe. Right. This is, and you're like,
and I know
in that
best.
Direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when you're open, like it's a good idea, of course, to have an idea and like, yes, I want my children to be healthy and happy and my son to feel more at ease in his own body and not so impulsive and, you know, cause it scares him or did scare him. But being able to be open to maybe your idea is not the best, like your end goal is, but let me show you a different way. And I mean, my son had behavioral things for years where every single day I got called to the school. Every single day.
I remember.
And I'd have to go pick up my son from school, or he would run away and he would run home from school. And I mean, this, like by drinking, it was like the same thing every day. And it was interesting because I was like, wow, this is, you know, I'm watching this now as a newly sober individual and seeing these same patterns of like this insanity of like doing the same things and expecting different results. And as the mother, like trying to do these same things to help my kid and not getting the results that I want. And then when I finally, there was a moment where he had his shift, so to speak, and he had an explosive episode and my boyfriend at the time was over and was like wrestling with him and trying to keep him down. And Lars, my son, right, was really little and my boyfriend was bigger. And it was just like this crazy thing to watch. But I remember feeling like, I'm absolutely out, like I have no power over this situation. Like I can't manifest anything in this. Like all I can do is surrender it to something beyond myself. And I went and sat on my son's bed and just like closed my eyes and his window was open. And like, literally I was just like, I give up, like I give up and I'm willing to see this in a different way or do something differently. And like this breeze came through the window.
Yeah, for sure.
And it felt so easy on my face. And I just like remember taking this breath and it's not like I had any clear direction in that moment, but I felt at ease.
Yeah.
And I realized that I didn't have to be in control. And from that moment, like immediately, right, my son had to go to a behavioral health facility, but he did. And he came out a completely different boy. And what I take away from that is that it's not like, it's almost an energy thing. Like I almost, it's not like I kept my son in that behavioral state, but I fed into it by, I need to do this and I need to do that. And when you take your hands off and you're just like allowed to sit back and like allow things to play out as they should, they will work themselves out. So getting back to your question of this spiritual,
it was a beautiful around the way answer.
Thank you. The spiritual practice just allows me to know that I may not know, you know, and that like, that's okay. And that, yes, inspiration will come and I will be enthusiastic about things. And then there will be, because you get sober, because you drink less and the filter's gone, does not mean that you are immune to life's lifeness,
no.
You know, and like people will still be exactly who they are and places will be what they are and consequences will come because it's just a natural thing. But you, the individual, right, who is not anesthetized or checked out, has the ability to see things differently. And I think if we're on this quoting path that I am, like when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. But that comes from putting down the bottle, right? And just like sitting with yourself. And my spiritual practice has changed immensely over 11 years. When I first quit drinking, it was like, I was just so hungry. Like we had just said, it was just like, I just want miracles and miracles. And I just want to get as spiritual as I can. I'm going to be the most sober person. But I don't want that anymore. It's not about that. It's about like, how can I be as easy as possible and allow things to come as they should. And so I do, I practice meditation every morning. You know, I pray every single day. I pray 75 times a day.
Yeah.
My kids make fun of me. They're like, my eyes will be closed. And one will say, what is she doing? I'm like, she's praying. Duh. But, and prayer is prayer. Prayer doesn't have to be to God. I think that prayer is just this honest, a mission to yourself. It's just an earnest desire to like see things different in that moment. So it's like, oh God, this feels really hard right now. Or God, or Abba, or the dog, whoever you know, whatever.
Yeah, you said Abba, like the Swedish band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
And Bob Marley, for sure.
Ja. But I mean that, like anything can, if as long as you know that it's not really just you. Yes, there is a power within us, and ultimately that, you know, maybe we are God, or this could go on and on.
This is like 10. This is the first of 10.
But that you, meaning like you are not the, because it is an energy thing and we are all one. So whatever you want to call it, if in the moment of your despair or confusion or doubt or worriedness or hurriedness, you just stop and you're like, maybe this, I can see it differently. Can I have like a new perspective? Can you show me a new way to see this? Can I, you know, or maybe I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, that's cool. What's up? You know?
Yeah. But
yeah,
it's working for you. And it's giving, this type of belief system is helping you.
Absolutely.
And it's helpful and it feels good. And I think that that is the indicator, right? Like you feel it in your body.
Yeah.
How helpful it is to you. We have to go pick up people. But I want to go, I want to end on, thank you for all your beautiful
I hope
pearls
that,
of wisdom.
I hope that.
I mean, I could do this all day.
Yeah.
We have a lot of offspring.
But I hope that you, those answered your questions in the way you wanted them answered.
You always answer my questions with essays.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was hoping for. Okay. How did you work with, and keep this answer under like 5 minutes?
Sure.
Okay, great. How did you work with like the dismantling of the older part of your identity, like shedding of the Kristen skin of party era Kristen who wanted to get fucked up? Like that's an identity that you know, right? And when identities fall away, it can feel like a total loss of a life. Like there's grieving that happens, there's release that needs to happen, tears that need to be shed, and like moving through that type of breakdown to come through breakthrough. It's like identity shifting doesn't always need to be so dramatic as I just explained it. It can be more subtle.
Yeah.
But how did you, so that was like, that's kind of, I'm setting my question up. But my real question is, how did you love yourself through that process and all that has happened to you and that you've been through in those earlier years?
Well, I mean, if I'm being honest, I feel like not until recently did I fully emerge from that. Because, I mean, as I said, and I'll keep this at 4 minutes and 37 seconds, is that when I got sober, right, I just wanted to go fast. I wanted to do and do and do and do and do. So even though in my head, I'm like, I am on the PTA and I exercise and I do this and I do that. And I gave myself all these titles. I still, if anybody stopped to talk to me about Party Kristen, I mean, I could tell you, it's like, I didn't think I remembered, but then if you asked me, I knew smells, I knew people, what they were wearing. Like it was so still, so real to me. And I would say that, like, I would go talk to people and I'd be like, I'm a nonprofit prostitute, right? And I'd make jokes about how the fact that, like, when I was out drinking, I just wanted to be the party girl who slept with everybody.
The best party girl.
The best party, like,
the best
that you could be. I wanted to be Courtney Love meets Michelle Pfeiffer.
See how ambitious you are, though?
Yeah. Right.
Drive, determination.
Well, and not until, I will say, I had the same boyfriend that I thank God for bringing into my life to help me in that moment with my son, because I would not have on my own admitted that my love couldn't help him, that I needed outside help. So I thank him for that. But that same human gave me another like guttural disemboweling of who I thought I was. And like the emotional, physical, spiritual disemboweling, because everything that I thought I was before he came went away when he went away, and like through a series of, you know, infidelity and lying and all this stuff, it's like I felt like he took away all these greater parts of me. And it was so baffling, because at the same time I also was like, what? Like it was like me looking outside my body being like, you don't believe that though, but hey, I felt that, like I knew that that wasn't true, but my body felt like he took all of these parts of me and everything I was building myself to be outside of the party girl, he took away. And he reinforced that I was just some party girl that could be discarded, if that makes sense, right? Like all the bad things I thought about myself, I felt like he reinforced, and all the good things I thought he took away.
With, let's throw it in, with his abusive behavior.
Yes. With the infidelity and the lying and all the things. So that's an important piece. He didn't come in as a saint. He came in as like
a manipulator.
Yes. So, but the reality is that was just another layer where it was like another stage of growing, you know, like I was ready to learn, and it was really uncomfortable. Like you said, when you take the filter away, when I took away his adoration and all this stuff, and then I was just left by myself. But before he came, I didn't think I was worthy of love. And then he came in and was like, yes, love, 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 love. And then he was like, whoop. You know, and so then I'm like, well, here I am again, just by myself. And like, how do I really love myself? And that, I think, is a more difficult thing than stopping alcohol. I think really learning to love yourself is a very uncomfortable thing to do, because it almost feels egotistical, or it feels arrogant. And you're like, well, who am I to do, you know, we want to give out all this love to our children and our siblings and all this stuff. But we deserve that same love, and to really believe that for yourself, about yourself, give that to yourself, is very difficult for some. And so how I have learned to do it, right, is, I mean, I called on everybody that I knew, and you, I called on you, and anybody that I knew in my life that I felt had, you know, some confidence and an idea of who they were. I was like, how did you do it? You know, I like, and that's a humbling moment too. I think humility, when you talk about humility, you're almost not humble, but I think, but I think humility, and if you want to put humility in a different way, it's just like being willing to see something differently, as I already said. And so I was like, wow, if I really don't love myself like I did, how do you love yourself? You know? And I think a way to love yourself is to like do loving things. And love isn't just like, I drew you a heart on a card and I gave you a kiss. Like love can be really gross sometimes, right? It's like wiping your kid's butt. That's love.
Yes.
Or like brushing your parents' teeth, or
picking lice out of your
child. And so like learning to love yourself isn't just, I mean, affirmations are great, but
it's not
just
always Valentine's Day when you love yourself.
It's allowing yourself to cry in bed and just like holding yourself in that fetal position and being like, it's okay to cry.
Yeah, or like take a nap even though you feel guilty about it.
So, I mean, that's a big question for me to answer, because I feel like I'm still in that process. And so in honor of authenticity, I don't want to give you some, oh, I love myself and here's how you do it. But like just knowing that we are where we are, and always growing from, like another thing that was told to me, right, is like bloom where you're planted. And so like I can't pretend or jump into the future just because I have this idea that I should love myself. I still need to go through the growing pains of really learning to love yourself and letting it be two steps forward and one step back. And so I can have really good days where I'm in love with me, and I'm like, yes, you're a beautiful individual. And then I can have days where I'm like, oh, you are so pathetic.
Like, yeah, I'm like, you know, what part of me needs nurturing and compassion right now?
Absolutely.
Which brings me to my favorite quote.
Yes.
The only way out is through.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. And absolutely. Then as I'm in school now, as you know, I go to a language school, a professional school of languages, which is like a really intense place to be sometimes, because I don't know what is being said, or I miss the direction, or, and part of the inner dialogue could be like, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Get out of here. You missed everything. What are you daydreaming about? Going to the grocery store, you stupid. And like, that weird little voice comes in, you're like, no, like learning to put the brakes on those rude voices and like whose voices are they really? And as we were saying earlier, to link everything back, it's like, you don't have to have all those answers. You can just learn new techniques to move forward, to stay present with where you are, to bloom where you're planted.
Yes.
Or like my motto for myself is, as I'm learning to live in a foreign speaking language and like live my daily life in a language that I'm not fluent in after many years of studying, is like, be bad at it until you're good at it.
Absolutely.
Or embrace the beginnership of mastery.
Yeah.
Like, no master ever just came out of an egg as a master of anything.
Right.
Master of none. I love
that. Yeah. But be willing to fail. Like, be willing to do it, like you said, and that's so important. Be willing to do it wrong.
Yeah.
Be willing to not get it right away.
And, yeah, let it be messy. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I think, I mean, how wonderful is it when you look back on things in your life that you didn't jump to the end of, like the jump to the end of the book, right? Where you really went through the process. It's like you're building a stronger foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have something to stand on if you just want to be at the end and know what the, you know, what the story finale is.
Yeah.
You've missed the middle part. And then it's like later in life, you're going to be like, wait, what are you talking about? I didn't catch that part.
Totally.
And, but if you go through it, then you're like fully immersed and you get this full head to toe, internal, external.
Well, it becomes change. Like this structural part of how you view yourself instead of like a makeup or a suit that you put on and pretend to be.
Well, and what are we but experiences? And I think that like the more most interesting people in my life are people who have experienced things, right? And not just like read about it and tell you, or, you know, it's just like, beyond being cultured, it's just like people who have gone through things and it took them a while. Like, I want to be way more patient and just like know that it isn't idle time, but, or being bored. It's like we're always learning no matter what in every moment. I don't know. But
we're going to end on that note. We always are learning no matter what.
Yeah.
So pick up my little learner.
Pick them up.
Cool. I could do this all day.
I love you so much.
Maybe we'll do another one.
I'm fine with it.
If the kids leave us alone for a minute. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here, if you're still here. I'm so grateful and honored to have my sister here. And I'm so proud of you.
I love you so much.
I'm so proud of you. We're like about to cry the whole time. Thank you for being here. We'll be back with another episode next week. And we always love hearing from you. So send us a message if you feel so inclined. We hope you have a beautiful day and take care of your beautiful self.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.